The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Fort Myers Beach no longer exists. I mean, it'll have to be rebuilt. It'll be something different. It was a slice of old Florida that you can't recapture. Sanibel's basically flattened. And even the structures that are standing, I was with the Coast Guard 2 days ago as we went overhead on it. Even the structures that are standing have been damaged by water, are probably uninhabitable and will have to be raised. So, I mean, this is a character-altering event. And it'll change the character and the nature of these communities. They'll be rebuilt, but you can't rebuild something that is a slice of old Florida and bring it back. It'll be something new, but it won't be the same, and that's the most heartbreaking part about it.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, unbelievable devastation, huh? Unbelievable. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Drew Mariani. Good to be back with you today. That was the voice you just heard of Florida Senator Marco Rubio telling ABC News, there's no comparison between Hurricane Ian and past storms. And I was just looking at footage. I had been away, as you might know, I was away a couple of weeks, actually. And it's good to be back. And then before I go on and we talk any news or anything else, I just want to thank John Harper, who sat in and just took the reins for the past 2 weeks. And I'll tell you what, he did a phenomenal job. John, if you're listening, thank you very much for taking over. It's good to leave the show in very competent and very professional hands. And John is that, an old news guy, competent, very polished broadcaster, and a man who, you know, is still today feeding this show and its team news stories and audio, and he's continued to do that when I worked with him as a colleague, and now that he's not with our network, and he taught me a lot about generosity and competition. You know, this is a strange business, the world of talk radio. You know, quite often in this industry, everything is based on ratings, you know, numbers, and you know, if you're doing a morning drive show and somebody else is doing an afternoon drive show, it's very easy to say, hey, I want my numbers to be better than the afternoon guy, right? Or, you know, I'm going to save this story for myself, right? And sometimes there's this spirit of competition amongst broadcasters. Here at Relevant Radio, we really do not have that. And I got to say that across the board with just about all of my colleagues. Producers work with one another, and so do the host. I mean, John Harper, as I said, when he was broadcasting on the network, he would feed me stories. And inevitably, he still does. I get a rundown of possible news stories every morning. And inevitably, there's a story or two that makes it to the show for you to be brought up to speed on. So, John, thank you. Look forward to having you back behind the mic again soon. But just a phenomenal job. And it's good to be there. I want to thank Maggie and, of course, Tom Siskevich, my other producers, who and Patrick Alog, who handled my absence well. A lot of people, you know, were saying how much they enjoyed hearing John, though. I got a lot of really great emails. But I'm back. The Chaplet is live today. That's right. So why don't you tell your loved ones, or if there's a special need or intention you have, that the Chaplet is live. It'll be interactive, and we will pray for each other this day. It's a special week, actually. This is the week, the anniversary of the death of St. Faustina. It's a very powerful day, and I will give you some background, not only on her life, but on her great feast and some of the promises she made from the other side of the veil, you know, that she would do for us. So there's some great stuff coming up. But let's pray for our country, too. I had been away and was actually you know, on a pilgrimage and was praying. And I want to send a shout out to all those that I traveled with. It was just so great to be with these people. I say when we travel, sometimes you become like a family. You spend a lot of time with one another. And we were, of course, battling jet lag and being able to pray together every day and have dinner together and just kind of hang out. It was great. So to all the new people I met, great to make your acquaintance and to become a friend. And for my traveling companions I've been with for a very long time, so good to travel with you. A special shout out to Wayne and Irma Kinsey. They went and they brought these beautiful medals of St. Patrick. I was actually in Ireland. And they took them to the tomb of St. Valentine, to the tomb of St. Patrick. And Patrick was a great evangelist. I won't talk about him now, but he's my patron saint of radio. And I shared the story with you in the past. And if you're not familiar with it, I maybe will share it with you again in the future. Why would St. Patrick be my patron saint when it comes to broadcasting, right? Great story. I don't have time today, but we'll get into that another time. While I was away, I was watching the violence of nature. And, you know, when sin entered the world, so did disorder. And we see this chaos, not just societally, but we also see it in nature. It's cyclical. It's driven by a number of factors. But the devastation of a hurricane, especially if you are in the crosshairs of it, it will certainly humble you. it'll make you realize that there are forces greater than you. But ultimately, God is in control. I just saw a news report that it is still not over. There are places in the interior of the Florida Peninsula where the water is still rising because it has nowhere to go. At least 61 people have died right now in the Sunshine State. Every day I'm looking at that number tick up higher and higher. Tens of thousands of people have been forced out of their homes. And the looting is becoming a problem. Although, and I don't know how true this is. It's kind of a weird thing. I heard in Florida they have this saying, if you loot, we'll shoot. If you loot, we'll shoot. Because we've seen the chaos and the havoc, haven't we, in the Twin Cities and in Seattle and in Chicago and in so many different cities, you know, during the riots that have taken place in the past. It's unfortunate that people will take advantage of somebody else's misfortune, especially in a time like this. This is when we need to sacrifice and pull together. So I don't like that motto personally, but there are places without power. Looting is becoming a problem. Governor DeSantis and law officials warned that they'll be tough on looters. They also warned that that Florida is a Second Amendment state. So Second Amendment, of course, you know what that is, right? It deals with your ability to bear arms. Some people have scrawled out signs, and I was referring to that a minute ago about looting. If you loot, we shoot, they say. So people are taking it into their own hands. I hope we don't get to that point. I think human life's too valuable. But it's indicative of what happens when things get tough. You know, and I think things, you know, things are cyclical, will get better, but there may be other storms as big, if not bigger. I've been praying, though. I was watching a lot of European news, and I've been watching what Russian President Vladimir Putin has been doing. And gosh, I'm really torn on this. Two things are happening here. One, I think that the consecration of Pope Francis, when he consecrated Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart, I think there are graces at work right now, and I think things are changing. And we'll talk about this coming up maybe in about 5 or 10 minutes here. I have a special guest coming by. We'll take a look at whether or not Putin's empire is now crumbling. Are these the final stages of it? Is he on his way out? Is he well? Secondarily, he's made threats about using every weapon in their arsenal. How true is that? Is it a win for him on any level, or is it a loss on every level? We'll break it all down for you. It's really quite an interesting analysis. So he's thrown all of his cards on the table now, and we'll see what happens. How do we get out of it? We pray. I really believe that prayer changes things. I'm such a believer in the power of prayer. I've seen the fruit of it. And I would encourage you to do the same thing. A small sacrifice today, just not having that glass of water or not having that second helping at meal or not having the dessert or putting that cigarette out or, you know, choosing not to have wine with dinner, whatever. The small sacrifices make it, offer it up for peace in the world, especially for peace in Russia and between Ukraine. The devastation there is unbelievable. You know, segments of our country has lost power, but can you imagine the devastation in Ukraine? All throughout Europe, there are Ukrainians now. How many of them will ever return home? I don't know. Separated from loved ones, lost spouses. I mean, it's a difficult situation. Thank God you're an American. You are a modern-day Roman, right? We are the modern-day Roman Empire. That too fell, so we need to be aware of that, but thank God you have what you have. I was having lunch with somebody today, and they said to me, oh, I was standing in line, and I guess they were eating someplace during the COVID when everything was closed down. I think he was at Trader Joe's or something. And he was, I couldn't believe I had to wait in line that long. And the person says, well, it's really not the same as what's happening in Ukraine, because we were talking about what was happening in Ukraine. But the point was, oh, my gosh, look at this long line. We take for granted what we have, you know, and it's very fleeting. It is very fleeting. After President Putin declared that the territories of East Ukraine were now part of Russia, the Treasury Department placed financial sanctions on 14 international suppliers that assisted Russia's military supply chains, and it also imposed sanctions on more than 100 members of Russia's State Duma and 170 other leaders. So along with those penalties, the U.S. said, hey, we're not going to recognize this annexation. Neither is the U.N. So you'll hear more about that coming up in just a moment. But the U.S. Department is looking to the finance and the energy sectors to further these sanctions on Russia. Here's a message actually from the State Department from over the weekend. Listen to what they had to say.
The United States will never recognize Russia's attempts to annex parts of Ukraine. Quite the opposite. We will continue to work with allies and partners to bring even more pressure on Russia and the individuals and entities that are helping support its attempted land grab. You can expect additional measures from us in the coming days. Because we've seen this movie before, we know what will come next. We expect Russia to use these sham referenda as a false pretext to attempt to annex Ukraine's territory. But no matter what President Putin and his enablers try to claim, these areas are and will remain part of Ukraine.
Yeah, well, so the strategy here, and I don't want to get too deep into it, because we'll talk about it in a few minutes. You annex this territory, now falls under your nuclear umbrella because he claims it's part of Russia. Will it keep the West at bay? You know, will it force Ukraine to dial back? We'll look at it. We'll look at what's going to happen. He claims it's his. The rest of the world says, no, it's not. But let's pray, pray, pray. Jonathan and Diana Toby. You familiar with that name? Probably not, right? They're from Maryland. It's a couple, a shameful, disgraceful couple. They've actually pleaded guilty to conspiracy. You know what they did? And this always, I don't know why this bothers me so much all the time. It probably bothers you too. They gave away confidential data on U.S. nuclear submarine technology. Now, why would you do that? Why would you give away U.S. nuclear submarine technology? Why would you give away something that's here to protect the homeland? Jonathan Toby was a U.S. nuclear engineer, and he contacted an unnamed foreign government with design information, and then his wife acted as a lookout when he would take these memory chips. He'd go to these dead drop places. And this is actually their second guilty plea after the judge rejected their first one because he thought the sentence sought by the prosecutors was too light. So they're facing life in prison, which is where I think they belong too. Shameful. What, for money? You're going to sell out the U.S.? Shame on you. The president, let's talk about him quickly too. I saw the report. I'm just going to throw this out for you. Pray for President Joe Biden. I'll certainly say for Kamala Harris, let's pray for our own world leaders, you know, our own nation's leaders. We certainly need it. The president has had, as you probably know, a touch of, you know, touch and go relationship with the truth. Sometimes it's a reality, right? But apparently, I saw in the publication was Politico Fact. They called the so-called fact-checking entity, you know, doesn't get that. Media Research Center, they did an analysis of PolitiFact's fact-checking, and they discovered that PolitiFact, check this out, they found zero examples, zero, of Joe Biden lying or being 100% wrong. And this comes after, think of the doozies that the president had to say after the evacuation of Afghanistan, you know? That's an extraordinary success! Really? We have 0% inflation. Yeah, tell that to the person who's praying three times as much for their eggs, right? Don Bongino. Let me share a little bit from him. You know, it was a little bit from the Joe Concha show. He did a recent interview with Dan Bongino about Biden's fact checkers. Check this out.
It's either the fact checkers are biased to the point of being activists, like you just talked about, or the fact checkers disappear when a fact check is completely unwarranted. And believe me, with this president, there's plenty of material to work with. Did you know, Dan, by the way, that CNN's fact checker appeared on the network hundreds of times? And that's not an exaggeration. In the 18 months leading up to the 2020 election, the fact checked President Trump. Well, you never guess how many times he's fact checked Joe Biden over the past 4 months going back to June. Once. And it only happened last week. So when
Time out. Once with this guy in office. Did I just hear that correctly?
Once since June. So if you go back 120 days, all the things that we just talked about. For example, when Biden says that gas prices are falling at its fastest rate in history, that's like me saying, you know what? I gained 40 pounds, but in the past couple of weeks, I've lost 6. I've never lost that much weight that much quickly in my life. Hey, what about the other 34 pounds?
All right, there's a little passionate Joe Concha for you. So we'll talk more. Midterms are coming up, so there'll be a lot to talk about. Can you believe the midterms are right around the corner? We're a month away from elections. I can't believe where this year has gone. Hey, one final story, and then we'll be speaking with Ivan Jankovic. He's going to be stopping by, and we'll take a little bit more, take a look at what's happening with Vladimir Putin. But a little bit of news. This was a surprising story, and I thought you should hear about it. Two cardinals. Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York and, of course, Blaise Cupich of Chicago. They teamed up and they wrote a column for American Magazine, and they decried an attempt by the Biden administration to force Catholic hospitals and healthcare workers to perform gender transition procedures. So I just want to applaud both these cardinals. Cardinal Cupich, thank you. Cardinal Dolan, thank you. I'll share with you what they said. They proposed this rule. The Cardinal said that there was a the administration proposed a rule in the Affordable Care Act that would mean this. I'm going to quote it. It would, quote, consider discrimination for a health care facility or worker to object to performing gender transition procedures, regardless of whether that objection is a matter of sincerely held religious beliefs or clinical judgment. And they made it clear that this is government coercion that intrudes on religious freedom of faith based on healthcare facilities, end of quote. And they said this is because they explained prohibiting the removal of a healthy functioning organ is not discrimination. So let's hope that the government does the right thing here. We'll see whether or not their letter has any impact. Well, the Holy Father, and I'll share with you very quickly just something he said, and let's talk about Russia. He came out, the leader of over a billion Catholics globally, made it abundantly clear this weekend he was not happy with the situation in Ukraine. Here is some audio from Pope Francis. Listen, this came from his Angelus yesterday.
It is disturbing that the world is learning the geography of Ukraine through the names such as Bucha, Irpin, Mariupol, Izium, Zaporizhia, and other areas, which have become places of indescribable suffering and fear. And what about the fact that humanity is once again faced with the atomic threat? It is absurd. What is to happen next? How much blood must still flow for us to realize that war is never a solution, only destruction? In the name of God, and in the name of the sense of humanity that dwells in every heart, I renew my call for an immediate ceasefire. Let there be a halt to arms, and let us seek the conditions for negotiations that will lead to solutions that are not imposed by force, but consensual, just, and stable.
If I have time, I'll actually share more of what he had to say personally. I'll read it because there's so much there. I gave you a quick soundbite there. But one of the things he said is that my appeal is directed above all to the president of the Russian Federation, imploring him to stop this spiral of violence and death. On the other side, painted by immense suffering of the Ukrainian people, I direct a similarly trusting appeal to the president of Ukraine to be open to serious proposals for peace. And it's the first time he's called Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky directly. First time he called those guys out directly by name. He's also very concerned about what he called the so-called absurd risk of a nuclear confrontation. That's because Vladimir Putin has been throwing those claims around that he'll use everything in his arsenal. And of course, look, Russia illegally annexed parts of eastern Ukraine after the sabotage of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines. And it's unknown to the public at this moment who committed the sabotage. But he's brought threats of more NATO. Brought threats from NATO and from the West of more military action against Russia. What's been embarrassing to Putin, though, is that one day after he made his annexation declaration, one day after he said, this is our territory, the big party, right? Russian troops had to retreat from one of the cities he claimed for Russia. They lost the territory. Russia's also facing internal dissension after Putin conscripted more than 300,000 men to fight the army. They want out of the country. They don't have to go to fight this war. There's too many men and women losing their lives. And there are reports that the number could go as high as a million people that he wants to conscript. So we'll see where that goes. But reports indicate that these men, they're not ready to fight. When they get to the front, they're poorly trained, not only personally, but even on the equipment. So I'm joined right now by Ivan Yankovic. He's a Serbian-born economist and political philosopher teaching at the University of Marion Bismarck, North Dakota. And it's great to have him here with us today to give us some perspective on what's currently unfolding there with Vladimir Putin and much more. Thank you for your patience, Ivan. It's good to have you with me today.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted. Pope Francis called for Russia to stop the war. That's, of course, very clear. But will that have any weight with Vladimir Putin? I know that the Patriarch Kirill, said last week that anyone who goes to this war with a good conscience and dies will have sins wiped away. So you have, it's a couple different messages here. But what do you make of these world religious leaders calling out you know, these presidents and also what Kirill had to say?
Oh, what Kirill has to say is more of the same, actually. He was known as one of the most radical proponents of violence and war, and unfortunately, Russian Orthodox Church, led by him, led his support to Putin's war from the very beginning, so that's not surprising at all in any way. But I would go back to Vladimir Putin. There is the Pope called Vladimir Putin to stop the war, and the implicit assumption of your question was that Putin wants to continue the war. I don't think that's the case at all. Putin is losing the war very badly on the battlefield, and his emissaries are trying to contact not only Ukrainians, but also Western intermediaries and convince them to put the pressure on Zelensky to stop the campaign of liberation of Eastern Ukrainian areas temporarily occupied by Russians and impose some kind of ceasefire and frozen conflict more or less along the front lines that exist right now. So I think that Putin wants peace at this moment, but not because he's a peacemaker, but because he knows he's losing the war, and every day.
Yeah, no, the risk. Russian forces have retreated from Lyman, a key city in eastern Ukraine, a day after Putin declared control of the region. And we're seeing men not want to fight. He's seeing the loss of territory. Yeah. And you're right. I do think he wants he wants peace. I saw a commentary over the weekend, Professor, that just made me think. It was one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you. The headline was this, and I forget where I saw it. It said Putin's empire starts to crumble. I think it was Rolling Stone that had this article out. And it says, as the Kremlin chose to escalate the war in Ukraine with dangerous gamble, the signs are now unraveling and becoming clearer, both at home and abroad, that his empire is starting to crumble. What's the future for Vladimir Putin? Is there an off-ramp for him? And is this the end of his reign? What do you see coming out of this?
Yeah. Those are good and difficult questions, but some things are certain in Russia. Very often, that's one thing that the Russian opposition leader Vladimir Karamurza said almost prophetically like 6 months ago, was that in Russia, very quick historical changes, very radical historical changes can come out of the blue very quickly. There is a possibility that we are now witnessing a radical process of possibly dissolution of Russia.
Right.
Because Russia, you know, the legal name for Russia is the Russian Federation. It's a technical federation, which is centralized only because Vladimir Putin holds an informal power in Moscow. But Russia is a collection of semi-independent fiefdoms that are held together by repression and by economic interests. All those, especially those far away provinces of Russia, like Buryatia and Chechnya, that are bearing the unproportionately high burden of the Ukrainian war, they're very dissatisfied now. And there are all kinds of clamor, even criticisms of Vladimir Putin right now. So if Russia loses the war, as now seems likely, the pressure not only for to end the Vladimir Putin's regime will increase, but also to end Russia as a state. That's a real danger. That's a real possibility.
Well, what concerns me, though, I mean, he's not going to want to give up power. Would he go so far as to use nuclear weapons against Ukraine? To me, doing the calculus. I've heard a number of experts talk about this. It's a lose-lose for him on a lot of fronts. I know he's using these threats, but, you know, desperation sometimes causes people to do desperate things. Would he ever use nuclear weaponry?
I don't know. I cannot. I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, but from what I see and from people from inside and outside Russia to whom I live, I think that Putin is a rational political agent. He's evil, but he's not crazy.
Yeah.
And nuclear threats are primarily targeted at Western audiences that are softer and more likely to negotiate with him and cut deals with him against Ukraine and against the Western long-term interest. To say, okay, let's handle this crazy man, Putin, who is threatening the nuclear war. Let's give him something in Ukraine and then get it done, rather than risk a nuclear war. I think that's the primary target of his propaganda. We are not talking about like a nuclear holocaust. Even his threats are about the highly limited, low-yield nuclear bombs that would be an order of magnitude weaker than the bombs thrown at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Yeah. Putin was using greater force against the Ukrainian civilians.
Yeah. Just one other note here, very quickly, if I could. I'm curious about the attitude of certain Americans towards Vladimir Putin. And there might be a number of people listening right now who share this view. There are people in the West who are actually supporting Vladimir Putin. You know, he's come out. He said, look, the West is moving towards open Satanism. His Western supporters are saying that, you know, he's opposing so much of the trash that we're seeing in the West, this transgenderism, all this rampant deviancy, which I think he's right to call out. You know, I think there's a lot of merit and truth in what he says. So they make this connection. Then, therefore, because he opposes these things, he is good. What are attitudes towards people in the West? Are there people who are supporting him? And what's the attitude in terms of others who support him globally?
Well, I don't know. But a good indication of how much things have changed with regard to Putin was the recent Italian elections. And the lady who won, who is going to be an Italian prime minister, belongs to a political party and movement that was distinctly pro-Putin before they supported Ukraine. Even some of the staunchest supporters of Vladimir Putin in Europe were put on the defensive and forced to play neutrality, if not completely distance themselves from Putin. So I think that the attractiveness of Vladimir Putin among his Western fans significantly declined because he had demonstrated the primary reason why he lost his attractiveness is that he's a loser. He's an incompetent. Well, he's a joke. Actually, he allowed Ukraine to beat him militarily. So he's not a kind of strong man that they dreamt about. And they
I'm sure he has many regrets. If he could redo it, he wouldn't. But I think there are a lot of things that were at play at home with his own administration. We looked relatively weak after Afghanistan and other things, and he probably thought, hey, I went into Crimea underneath of Obama, and I'll do the same thing under Biden. There was no real reaction.
Obama, hey. I mean, just listen to Russian opposition leaders. They're absolutely livid that almost all American presidents, including Biden and Trump, for not supporting Ukraine.
Yeah, well.
At the right time, Obama refused to deliver the javelins for his entire second term. And eventually it was Trump administration in 2018 that started.
Professor, I'll have you back again. I want to talk more. Time is always my enemy. I wish we had an hour to unpack, but I'd love to. We'll continue to monitor the developments happening between Ukraine and Russia. But thank you for your insight and your analysis. It's good to talk with you. People want to track you down. I'm assuming the University of Mary there in Bismarck, North Dakota is the best place to do that. So we'll catch up again soon. All right. That's Ivan Yankovic, a Serbian-born economist and political philosopher there, teaching at the U of M. I'm going to take a short pause. Maggie, do we take a break? Yes. Well, I'll take a short pause. I've been away from the mic for a couple of weeks, so you can tell my timing is off. We'll be back. We'll take a look at something else that I just came across. I found this out this morning, and I want to talk about it. The Seal of Confession under attack again. Have you heard about this? Wait till I'll plug you in, okay? Stay with me.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Although the Seal of Confession is similar to professional secrecy, there is a fundamental difference between them. Professional secrecy, for example, in the medical field, can be broken in exceptional cases, but that's not true for the Seal of Confession.
A doctor in cases of public health could say, I treated a person with a contagious, very dangerous disease, and I should maybe inform the local doctor to treat that person. especially in very, very serious cases. But in the case of confession, not even then. Because as a priest, my duty is not to public health. My obligation as an instrument of Christ is to forgive if the conditions to forgive exist.
Real faith, real talk. You're listening to Drew Mariani on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be back here with you today. What is the seal of confession? Why is it something that the Catholic Church has defended for millennia? And we've been talking about confession recently, haven't we? And how it has come under attack, whether it's Australia or our own homeland, whether or not, you know, prosecutors want priests to break that seal. Before we even begin, it'll never happen. All right. Never, ever happen. I'm going to tell you right now. The consequences for that, if a priest does it, is excommunication. Right. Very serious deal. And there have been many priests who have lost their lives. They laid their life down for that seal. So when you go in there, look, it's confidential. And as St. Faustina says, and she's spoken much about confession, you actually meet Jesus Christ himself. He's only hidden behind the screen of the priest. He's only hidden behind the priest himself, he says. You know, but he's at work. So when you walk into a confessional, you bear your soul to the priest on the other side of that screen. So whether you're confessing something small or maybe something big, you know, he's never going to reveal it to anyone. So you can be, it's called the seal of confession because it's meant to give you that peace of mind and that protection. Priests know this, no matter, you know, what they hear in confessional, they can't tell the guy they room with. They can't tell anybody. Yeah, they can never reveal to anyone, ever. So if you're worried about that, don't. Get to confession, okay? You'll be glad you did. That's a big hang-up for some people. Oh, you know, what if he tells? You know, he can't even say whether or not he heard a confession. If somebody said, oh, did you hear, you know, Drew's confession? He can't even say that. You know, and this is true in any kind of context, in everyday conversation, just sitting around, shooting the breeze. He can't do it, right? Even in legal contents. It's been well-established principle in the law that there are certain kinds of communication between people involved in legal action that are off-limits, right, to the courts. Courts can't meddle in them. They're called privileged communication. And there's actually three of them, right? You've got the very famous attorney-client communication. Yeah, that's privileged. You want your attorney, that's it. Communication starts with the law enforcement, and whatever you share with him is between the two of you. The doctor-patient, communication that you have, that's privileged. And the priest-penitent, that's the third one. So of the three, only one seems to come under regular scrutiny from politicians. Isn't that funny? Did you ever think about that? You know, they all this pressure is being applied to politicians to remove the privilege from the law. And I'm sure you can guess that it's the priest penitent privilege that is the one that they want to remove. So the current reason it comes under regular scrutiny is because of the clergy sexual abuse scandal. And you might remember that California tried a couple years ago to force priests to reveal instances of clergy sexual abuse when they hear it in confession, whether from the victim or the perpetrator. Fortunately, that went nowhere. Relevant Radio was on the front lines of that, really marshaling the troops, and the response from the laity was overwhelming. Now the Associated Press came out with a very lengthy piece last week, right? And with this headline, check out this headline. Churches defend clergy loophole in child sexual abuse reporting. That's the headline. Churches defend clergy loophole in child sex abuse reporting. And here's one of their opening paragraphs. Quote, this loophole has resulted in an unknown number of predators being allowed to continue abusing children for years despite having confessed the behavior to religious officials. In many of these cases, the privilege has been invoked to shield religious groups from civil and criminal liability after the abuse became known to civil authorities. Do you see how cunning and twisted that actually is? How there's a degree of truth, but it's really cloaking falsehood, right? Deception. I'm joined today by Monsignor Stuart Sweatland. He's the president of Donnelly College in Kansas City, Kansas. Serves as the executive secretary for the Fellowship of Catholic Scholars. It's good to have him here for perspective on this. And you're more than welcome to join too, so feel free to call in. Monsignor, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Great to be with you, Drew. Welcome back.
Thank you. So much to talk about here. Again, this comes up over and over and over again. And, we don't see this necessarily with, attorney-client, do we? Or even in the medical community. What is it that they think that this penitent priest privilege you know, should be revoked. And what do you make of even the headline that I just shared with you from the AP, which really misrepresents what this sacrament's all about and what the church is doing? Because the church has done an incredible job to try to right the wrongs that have been done in the past.
It's yellow journalism. It's constitutional and religious ignorance and bigotry. The AP should be ashamed of itself that their editors let this article be published. Yep. But it goes back to our history, Drew. You know, priests have had to die for this sacramental seal. And it's always the powerful that try to solidify their power by destroying. And this is straightforward, an attack on the Catholic Church. Yep. This is, you know, you think back to some of the martyrs for the confessional. Back in the Middle Ages, there was a king who wanted the confessor to his queen to reveal the contents of the confession, you know, and he could argue it was importance of state, you know, the legitimacy of the reign of the line of succession or whatever argument you could make. You could say that's so important that this little thing, the seal, needs to be this obstacle needs to be getting rid of. Or in the I think of Blessed Mateo, who was a Mexican priest who heard the confession of what the government at that time called insurrectionists, right? The Cristeros people. And of course, the government wanted them to reveal the secrets. Well, you know, all the time the powerful do this, and it's not so much that they want the little bit of information, though they want it. They really want to destroy the church. And this is a direct attack on the church. Fortunately, in our governmental system, we have an absolute right under the First Amendment to practice our faith completely, wholly, and entirely. And we're called to practice it completely and entirely and faithfully. And part of our faith is the absolute absolute secrecy of the confessional seal.
My guest today, Monsignor Stuart Spedlin. We'll take a few of your calls, too. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in 888-914-9149. Monsignor, let's go to Passaic, New Jersey. Joe's got a suggestion. Might be interesting to propose. Joe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Father and Drew. Great. Got to thank Relevant Radio for setting me on the right path. Anyway, what I was thinking, why not just do away with face-to-face confession? Just always do it through the screen, and then priest has no way of knowing who the person is. And I mean, he's not supposed to reveal it anyway.
Yep.
What would be a problem with doing it that way?
Great suggestion.
And the priest does have the right now, Drew, to refuse to hear confessions except behind the screen. The Vatican changed that a few years ago, I think during the pontificate of Benedict, if I remember right. But and many priests I know have done that, you know, only hear confessions behind the screen. So some of these issues, obviously, there would go away. And that's a very good point that the caller makes that, you know, when I hear confessions, I seldom don't even know the people anyhow, even if they don't go behind the screen. Right. I notice in the confessionals where the option is given now that well over 90% go behind the screen anyhow. So it's more and more. So that may be something we need to do in the future. And the priest has that right now, though there are settings that I must admit where people have. I'm thinking of my own self when I as a penitent wanted to be seen by the priest and went face to face. So right now in places where the priest doesn't exercise his right to refuse to do it that way, the faithful do have their choice, but we may have to go in that direction.
Got it. Joe, thank you for the call. It is a good suggestion to say the least. You know, I was struck, Monsignor, that 17 states right now do not acknowledge the priest penitent privilege in one fashion or another. And of course, as you know, so far, no priests in those states have been prosecuted for not telling the state about a case of sex abuse. Should we expect something like that to happen in some of these states that don't recognize it? And of course, we know what's going to happen, right? Maybe you can paint a picture. The priest will end up in jail, right? He'll stay there for as long as he's probably sentenced. And as you pointed out, priests have even lost their lives for this. But 17 states don't recognize this.
Yeah, and obviously, for priests, that puts us in some degree of jeopardy. But yes, we would go to jail. We would die rather than reveal. If I remember right, a few years ago, Drew, and I think maybe you and I maybe even talked about it at the time, There was a priest, I believe, in the South, I think in Louisiana, where they tried to, force him to, and he refused. And, they threatened him with contempt of court. But at the end, I think the appeals system worked in his case, so he didn't end up going to jail. But there's already been attempts at this. And there have been in history, too. This is one of the most important things. And the reason why it has to be, just psychologically, Drew, everyone has to know, just like they have to be able to freely talk to their lawyer or freely talk to their doctor without fear that that information will be used against them, the penitent must have that freedom. And the good news about that is if someone is a very serious sinner, this is their chance for the priest to convince them to change their ways, and so that others will not be hurt. And this, if we lose that, because face it, if we lose that absolute right to secrecy in the confessional, we're going to destroy the sacrament. Another avenue towards repentance, another avenue towards salvation, another attitude towards a better society will be lost.
No kidding. My guest today, Monsignor Stuart Sweatland, if you want to join us, maybe you haven't been to confession in a long time, maybe you have a problem with it, maybe you've got a question, feel free to dial in. The number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Our conversation will continue with your calls, Monsignor Sweatland, and more right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. The Chapel of Divine Mercy, 10 minutes away. It is live today. Looking forward to praying with you and for you. So feel free to tell your loved ones, especially if you have a difficult situation and you really need some extra prayer. Prayer family, this global, really, prayer team is going to gather in just a few moments. And not only do we pray coast to coast, but there are I bumped into people in Ireland. I bumped into people in various a group from the Philippines stopped by the radio studio today. They love praying with us. So all across the world, we are invoking God's mercy. That's coming up in a few minutes. And the lines fill up pretty quick for that. If you're just joining me, we're talking a little bit about confession. It has come under attack. We've talked about the situation in Louisiana. There was a case in Utah. You remember Australia, the threats down there, San Francisco. Lots of different places that we have seen. The reason it comes under attack, and it's not just to bring to light perpetrators, right? There are hidden powers with this sacrament. I think seldom do we stop to contemplate how powerful this sacrament is in freeing us, right? Of ridding us of pride, of freeing us of demonic oppression, right? There was an exorcist in Rome who wrote that confession, that the sacrament of confession is as powerful against the enemy as a formal exorcism. In fact, I heard one sacramental confession is worth more than 10,000 exorcisms. So why? You purge darkness, you purge the demonic, you set yourself free, right? It's the sacrament of mercy, and Satan hates it. He hates this sacrament. I think it's one of the reasons that we're seeing so much attack against it. If you're just tuning in, I'm joined this afternoon by Monsignor Stuart Sweatland, and we're taking a look at some of these cases. We'll take a few of your calls. We only have a couple minutes left. So if you want to get in, our number is 888-914-9149. And Father, during the break, Maggie says that you were doing a little fact-checking. The case we talked about,
Louisiana. Back in 2014, it took to 2016 for the courts to finally uphold the right of the priest not to reveal legally, and he was under that threat of contempt of court throughout that time. But the courts did finally uphold it, which is good. And Drew, if I can give just a witness, beautiful witness you just gave about the power of the sacrament of confession. of reconciliation. But I don't believe I would be a Catholic today if it wasn't for the sacrament.
Wow.
And the absolute seal, the confessional. I joke that, and it's true, that my first confession took all day on Good Friday before I was received in the church. That's because I started it before the Good Friday services, and my first confession was so long, the priest had to pause it, and I didn't get to the rest of it till after the celebration of Good Friday, which, as you know, takes many hours.
Wow.
If done fully. And so, but, you know, it was the joy of having my sins forgiven. You know, that's what Chesterton's short answer was. Why did he become Catholic? To have my sins forgiven. And everyone needs to know they have that absolute privilege and possibility of have every sin forgiven in the sacrament.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, Maggie was talking during the break with me. She says, you know, do priests recognize the voice of the penitent? And I thought that was a really good question, because I also heard, yeah, I've asked some priests that question. Oh, do you remember any of these confessions? And some of the priests were like, you know, believe it or not, Drew, it's really a weird phenomenon. I'll hear a confession, but then it just kind of leaves me. It's like, I don't really remember. I don't know whether that's a grace that certain priests have, or whether or not the priest says, oh, that was Mrs. Jones. You know, she's here again on that, there's a human factor involved here, but fill me in.
No, there's a supernatural thing. By the grace of God, God's given me a very good memory. And though as I get older, it's a little bit more shoddy. I can remember baseball statistics from when I was a little kid.
I mean,
that's just
awesome.
Ridiculous stuff, right? But when I hear confessions, it's like, I've never heard. They just go away, and I cannot explain that except as a supernatural gift. I just don't remember them. Sometimes people assume you have if they're repeat customers, you will.
You're right.
But I just don't, and I'm glad I don't. So I have no temptation to do what I would never willfully do, which is break the sacrament.
Yeah,
break
the seal, you're not the only one who said that. I've heard that from other people as well. That it must be a grace, which is phenomenal. We only have a few moments left here. Just some final, thoughts from you on all this as well. I mean, the things. Look, with the life issue, people are like, I'm against abortion, except if the child is raped or if it's incest. I mean, they make all these like. These qualifications, it kind of breaks the logic of why you should be against it at every stage. But the same thing with confession. Some people can say, I understand it, but boy, if somebody comes in and confesses that they sexually are abusing somebody or they've been abused and the priest can't say anything about that, that's where people kind of that's where they parse their line. I'd love to get your take on that and maybe we can see the big picture. And then also the other thing too is imparting absolution and carrying out actions. I mean, we go in, but there is also quite often there's also the penance that needs to be done. So maybe we can talk about that aspect in just a couple final moments that I have here.
Well, remember, to give absolution, there must be that true remorse.
Yeah.
And that, that firm commitment to amend my life. And so this is a chance for whatever, whenever a person is struggling or is, doing things that are wrongers, especially those doing serious wrong. This is a chance to be told, look, your immortal soul is at stake. You have to stop doing whatever it is that's separating you from God and harming others and harming yourself, because the first effect of sin is on the sinner. And so you need to, they're going to have that opportunity of true repentance. And, it is a wonder to see God's grace work in healing people and restoring them. Augustine said it's a greater act, the recreation of the soul that happens through the sacramental celebration of reconciliation is a greater act than making the soul from scratch. That new soul that's made through the sacrament.
Right.
So you can imagine why the devil and his minions are trying to attack the sanctity of the confessional in this very difficult time we live in. But we need to stand strong. This is one thing every Catholic should be united on,
amen,
is protecting the seal, protecting our First Amendment rights to celebrate the sacraments fully and wholly.
All right, let me grab a quick call or two before we run out of time. Bob's in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Bob. Good afternoon. Hey, Bob, go right ahead. You might be in delay, so if you're hearing me, I'll give you another second or two to get on. We'll see if we can make that connection. All right, Bob, Father, I'm going to put him back in queue because I only have a moment or two left. Bob, my apologies. He was just going to make a comment, I think. They were telling me about how there are long lines of teenagers willing to go to confession. Quite often I say the lines before confession are very short. you know, but the lines for communion are very long, so it's good to see that. Before I let you go, you're a military person. I had a conversation a little bit earlier with a professor, and we were talking about Vladimir Putin's warning to the world that, you know, he'll use everything in his arsenal, so to speak, to, you know, to ensure all the territories that fall under the Russian umbrella, if you will, the nuclear umbrella that he has, and he's annexed four of those states. What do you see happening here? I'm curious as to your take with what's going on in Ukraine. Pope Francis consecrated Russia and Ukraine in the world by name, re-echoing John Paul II. And there are reports now that it looks like Putin's empire may be crumbling. He's losing territory. What do you see spiritually happening here, and how do you see this playing out?
We definitely need the prayers of the Divine Mercy Chaplet and the Rosary that peace will happen here, because this decaying and falling apart emperor and empire might do desperate things in the last moment, and we would not want that to happen. We can only pray for peace, and that reasonable people will not do, you know, suicidal and destructive things to themselves and the world in this moment. So I'm very happy the Holy Father is trying to encourage peace negotiations that are real peace negotiations. But let's face it, that Russia has to give back territory that they have seized unjustly. They've committed the crime of aggression, and the Ukraine people have a right to defend themselves. But for the sake of the world and the sake of world peace, we need a negotiated settlement and withdrawal of the unjust invasion.
Well, Monsignor, thank you. Always good to talk with you. We're going to pray now. We'll pray for Russia. Let's pray for Monsignor as well. I'll be right back.